Session number 20459, reel 15.
Captain Spencer, reel 15. You're on the jetty at Rimini. What happened after
well,
you fell over?
Well, basically, things went very blank, obviously, for quite some time. Because daylight was quite creeping in, and I can't remember what time I actually came to land on the face in the gutter. But quite a lot of people had obviously gone by and possibly rolled me over one way or the other. But eventually I recovered with and staggered back to the rest camp, having got a lift from a jeep, showered, and swore that this would never, ever, ever happen again. As a matter of fact, it was 20 years before I could have another drink of rum, because any time I smelt it, I really felt ill. So it was a very severe lesson, but bearing in mind the previous circumstances. Having recovered, I was still in the process of having a very detailed debrief. And I had a session that day, and we covered a lot of the ground. When travelling between Verona, Vicenza and Treviso, I had noticed quite a bit of army activity, and that a place not very far from Verona, up in the hills, was obviously quite a large army headquarters, because of the trucks and vehicles and barracks nearby and everything else. So I'd made a note of in my mind of where this particular location was. Also in the foothills, when I'd been travelling, there were certainly on going up near the valley of the Adige, there were a number of fortifications already built and some being built. So I made a note of where those particularly were. But nearer Treviso, I noticed this time travelling on the road, because I had my bicycle then, a very large German staff car with a flag in front and motorcycle light riders and everything else turned left, and so I went round this way also to have a look, and just more or less probably 4 or 5 miles away, they went up into the foothills again to a very large mansion which had guards all round it and everything else. And obviously a very senior ranking officer. So I thought that might be very interesting too. And the people I were talking to in the debrief were very interested in this and other observations I'd made about the conditions of the roads and various things. So I hope that was fairly useful to them. I must have been probably in the rest camp for about 5 or 6 days, I think. And as I had no papers, I was given a temporary pass. But also, as I had no proof of inoculation, they gave me a whole cocktail of inoculations, which certainly knocked me down for 24 hours.
Had you had those before, as far as you can remember?
Yes, as far as I had the normal Watson-A, but as I hadn't got any proof of what I had, they decided, especially from where I'd came. And so in spite of my protest, they produced this. I then, in train to Naples, went into a temporary quarters there, a very small mess, although quite a big barracks. And my papers were in there, but between Bari and Naples, I'd lost the papers proving I had inoculation.
Oh.
And they refused to accept, in spite of seeing punches on my arm. So, unfortunately, I was given another dose of inoculations there and was told that a ship was sailing for England in 2 or 3 days' time but that I was going to look after about 20 ex-POWs who'd come from all parts of Europe and gradually made their way to this particular place. I had a very, very brief meeting with them. The most senior rank was a corporal. They, even on first appearance, seemed an untidy, scruffy, very belligerent group. But we tried to, at a very brief period of time, and we were all embarking on the ship in there 2 or 3 days, and I found myself in a cabin. I had acquired some civilian-type shirts and things to relax in, and suddenly there was an announcement over the watch saying, "Will Lieutenant Spencer immediately report to whatever the place was?" And there was a major there from the REs who looked at me and said, "You're an absolute bloody disgrace. You know, how can you dress like that? Don't you realise you're an officer? You should behave like one," and so forth. So I used my best sander, "Sir, sir," every time he made a remark. "You're right, go and get bloody properly changed and come back here immediately," which I did. But when I came, and I had, of course, brand new, then SD type, ordinary khaki dress. But I was wearing my MC, which was an immediate reward after the patrol, which they'd given me on the spot. And so when I stood very spartly, he noticed that, and his tone slightly changed. And I did idly ask him, had he been in the war himself?
What did he say?
Well, of course I have, yes, with this, that, and the other. But from then onwards, he was quite... And I said that I'm looking after these people and I would like somewhere to meet them to be able to talk them, to make some form of a repair. So he arranged a room for me to meet these people, and I also arranged some coffee or something for there, because it was obviously a dry ship anyway. And they were, I think, on this first meeting, fairly cooperative. I got a list of their names, and hopefully, although we weren't expected to sort of have anything to do with them, I suggest that we meet again in a couple of days. But because of their general attitude, and I think because the sergeants and officers were sort of treating them with expecting them to behave like ordinary soldiers, where they'd been wandering all over Europe and gone through great privation. They weren't particularly army orientated, shall we say. So I constantly, throughout the voyage back home, had to sort of pull them out of scrapes or arguments or this, that, and the other. And strangely enough, the longer it went on, the better reports I had with these people, and they sort of used to come to me for support. And I said, "Well, Christ, try and keep out of trouble one way or the other." We eventually landed at Greenock.
What sort of things were getting them into trouble?
Well, insubordination to officers, sort of not doing as they're saying, sort of missing parades and when they were told to report. Arguments were quite a lot, sort of a form of fisticuffs. Generally, sort of fairly unruly behaviour, but at that time again, there was a other ranks, or rather, warrant officers weren't too happy if their orders weren't obeyed, or they weren't given proper respect. So that sort of thing caused a certain amount of difficulty.
What were the other troops on the ship with whom you were travelling?
Well, mostly they were either people who were at that time returning on leave, had been reposted to England, a great mixture of people, including quite a lot of naval staff. There were some civilians as well who were going back for some reason or other. I can't even remember the name of the ship now, but it was, of a fairly large capacity. Anyway, we landed at Greenock and went on to the station platform, and another fight had brought up between the three of these ex-prisoners of war and naval personnel on the what's name, but with the naval military or the police there and the what's name, we were able to sort this out, and I talked everybody into the fact, well, you know, the circumstances that all these people have been through and this, that and the other. There was one chap who lived at Hamilton, which is not too far from Greenock, and he wanted to go home from there, and I said that, you know, you want to get all your paperwork done, you're going to have extended leave, you're going to get your pay, you're going to get special rations and this, that and the other, so it's far better to go down to London and come away free, and he agreed with this. And I gave a last talk. I said, look, it's now, you know, you're going to have a long time now, so for Christ's sake, behave yourself. You're only going to be at most a couple of days before you'll be all back home with all your saved money and probably some other benefits for you. So we got down to London and went into Baker Street Hotel, a hotel at Baker Street. And in the meantime, one or two people had phoned, and two lots of parents had turned up at the hotel and were asking if there, because nobody could go into the hotel because the military police otherwise said they couldn't, they're having to wait outside on the platform. So I went to find the CO, who was playing then billiards in the billiards room. And he says, well, can't you see I'm playing billiards? I don't want to be disturbed now. So I said, well, you know, we're from Cernsa, come down here. You know, not that interested. I said, well, you know, there are parents of these people waiting outside. I think you might, sir, if you know, just give it a consideration. He said, they can't go out and they can't come in. And that's it. So I turned on my heels and walked out, and I thought, that's not a very satisfactory arrangement, to put it mildly. So I called all these people together and I told them what had happened. I said, now you're on absolute bloody trust. You've escaped from the whole of Europe. If you can't get out of this bloody hotel, it's not worth anything. But you've got to promise me that you're going to be back here at the latest 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Otherwise, you know, you're leave are going to be cancelled, you'll be under detention and everything else, but just disappear, you know, as quietly as you can, but come back here. Every single bloke was there in the morning, so that I thought they'd probably never see them again, but they did come, and all the paperwork was completed, and off they went. And thanking me for, I don't know what, but you know, it was quite a reasonable parting. Looking forward to our break.
Was this hotel at Baker Street then reserved for former prisoners of war who'd returned?
What was the...
Was the hotel at Baker Street reserved
War? It was a army staging house, I suppose. There were all sorts of personnel. There were only 20 of us.
Yes.
Of our group, and the place was, you know, full of officers of various things. But what... You know, they were either working in London, they were in communications or something or other. So I went off home. I hadn't been able to obviously contact my parents. I'd written them a letter. And I went to, they were living at Blackheath. I got out of Blackheath Station and up the long corridor. And it just so happened that a flying bomb exploded just when I was getting to the top. Luckily not close, but the blast virtually bowled me over, so I rolled it two or three times. I thought, well, that's a nice welcome back to the country. The bomb, I didn't see where it actually had dropped, but it couldn't have been that far away because there's still a cloud of dust in the air, and it was midday.
Was this a doodlebug or was it a...
Yes, well, it was a you know, one of the ones that flew and
buzzed.
Yes. I think, well, I can't remember which was which now. There was a flying bomb and the doodle bug.
Well, the flying bomb was the V1, that it was a bomb with a ramjet engine on it, yes. Yeah. And the V2 was the rocket that arrived that morning.
Well, I think this possibly was the rocket, the V2 then. Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't see it actually drop.
There was no warning of it arriving.
There was no warning of it at all arriving. So there probably was that, but coming up the platform. Where we were in St. John's Avenue was not very far from the station. When I got there, it had obviously been quite considerably damaged. And my parents were there, so I'm not sure the next door neighbours. And they told me that they had moved, but somewhere very quite close to the thing. So I went there, and I'm pleased to say my mother was there, so it was quite an emotional reunion, to say the least. And we were discussing what had happened. I said I couldn't let her know. She said she'd had my letter, first letter from Barry. But she had been told, because I was missing at that time, that I had been located. They got a message out of Yugoslavia to say that I had been located and was fit and well and so forth and so on. So she'd heard that. But she also said that before I got that message, I had this dream that you had opened a window and said, "I'm all right," which is in actual fact what had actually taken place in Yugoslavia. I had said, "You know, Mum, don't worry, I'm all right." So we had a very nice time. I was, I think, then a bit of a mental wreck. I couldn't sleep on the floor. I couldn't wear shoes because I'd suffered from minor frostbite and my ankles had swollen from having ripped them a couple of times. So I paddled about, but my mother was extremely tactful. She didn't sort of say, "Oh, you must sleep on a bed," or that sort of thing. I used to find if I heard a noise, I would sort of shoot up and get into the corner. Where am I? What have I got to do with this, that, and the other? So I must have been I didn't think I was, but a bit of a nutcase. But
were the ex-soldiers, were the ex-prisoners of war who were soldiers on the ship, were they in the same sort of condition?
Well, we didn't think necessarily we were in a condition, but yes, I think that one had short fuses. Now one talks about all these syndromes. I mean, they're not normally, even in those days, recognised as being things that the British soldier should have. But I mean, quite definitely, I still find that if somebody locks me in a room, I'd kick the door down. I just, you know, I have that form of being in a cell does affect you that way. It doesn't show itself, obviously, and this wore off, obviously, you know, with again, I was on leave, I got the money saved up, I was on special rations, I got petrol coupons. I acquired a car somehow. I can't think that I actually, I went to all the various races and all the various clubs and obviously had a very enjoyable few weeks, and again, because you're in uniform and in London, I used to go to the overseas club. You got invitations to dinner all the place. You were sort of treated, especially because you've got a decoration. You were invited out to various things. I mean, you had a fellow called Sir Jocelyn Lucas, who I met at the overseas club, and he used to like me to go to dinner to escort various people and talk about the war to him. But on one particular occasion, I remember, I had met this very attractive girl in the overseas club. I realised I was supposed to go to dinner, but the attraction of the moment, I think, was a little too much for me. We went out to dinner, so didn't get to this dinner. And when I next saw Sir Jocelyn Luke, I've never known a man give me such an absolute dressing down. He really tore me into absolute shreds, which was, and quite rightly so. You know, I should have notified and everything else, but it did sort of pull me up short, I might say. In the meantime, I also took up the Major Roberts that I had known on the plane coming out, had given me an address in the corner of Northumberland Avenue and Whitehall, which were government buildings there. So I went there, and at the desk at the what's now Major Roberts, and I was asked a room 204 and asked for somebody or other. I can't remember what the other fellow's name, and this took some time. And they said, oh, there's nobody of that name. So I said, well, can I see room 2? I insist on seeing somebody. So eventually I was taken upstairs to a room which had a desk and a chair in it. And I thought that either there was a sort of a little patch on the wall that looked a bit sort of an observation post or a camera or something or other. So I was sitting there waiting some time. Then a person came in a battle dress with corporal stripes on. But he hadn't got matching trousers. He had brown shoes and he had a tie under his collar, which of course wasn't worn by other ranks at that stage. And he started asking me questions. And I explained, you know, where I'd met Major Roberts and that I'd come out of Yugoslavia and I was looking for something more interesting to do, I believe, you know, something behind the lines or this, that, and the other. And he sort of, and I said, look, for Christ's sake, I said, if you're supposed to be a sort of secret service officer, I don't think you're particularly clever to come in here with brown shoes and a bloody tie on. I mean, you're obviously an officer. Say, oh, this, that, and the other. We then got on a little better, and he said, well, we're arranging a course. I think it was at Brecon in so-and-so, and we'll notify you of what's to be done.
What sort of questions did he ask you when he first...
Well, he wanted to know that whether I was at Sandhurst, or, you know, which unit, because I hadn't got then the signals of a regiment. I mean, though I was in the 16th Queen's Lancers, I hadn't come to there in my SD uniform, and so he was asking me details to try and establish, one, whether I was ready to do this, and two, that I was who I was.
What about you mentioned that you were debriefed in the rest camp at Rimini before you came home. Who did that debriefing?
It was Barry, by the way, not Rimini.
Bari,
yeah.
So you were in Bari, okay.
It was in Bari, that's the... Yeah. I don't know whether I said Rimini. Rimini was where I was taken prisoner.
Yes.
But it was Bari where I was.
Bari was the rest camp.
The rest camp, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
That's where we landed with the plane.
Yeah. Who was actually debriefing you at Bari at the rest camp?
He was a captain, and... I was told that he was in the intelligent unit, but I can't remember any more than that. I can't remember if he had any badges of a regiment there. But there were two people there, one certainly taking notes, and also another lieutenant who also asked me one or two questions. This apparently was... where I was, where anybody being returned as a prisoner of war came to this particular place. They were quite well versed in the techniques of debriefing.
What interested them in particular?
What interested them particularly was what I observed about the continued fortification. They were certainly interested in where the generals, because I think they were suggesting, well, we might try and pinpoint that for an attack if we can locate it exactly. And when you're travelling on a bicycle or by road, you get a pretty good idea of your exact location rather than speeding past in a car. So that sort of information was quite interesting, and or any barracks in any particular place, or a large quantity of troops anywhere. So those were the general questions. They asked also about the attitude of the inhabitants, which on the whole were totally anti-fascist, and certainly by that time anti-German, because then... The the Italians had surrendered. So that was the basis. So that I eventually went to this place at Brecon.
So when you talk to your chap who was dressed apparently as a corporal in Northumberland Avenue, you mentioned that Major Roberts had given you a code word to use.
Yeah.
Did you use that?
Yes, I'd used that, and that's what got me to the interview room. So that that particular, but though they denied the person I asked for wasn't there, the code word obviously produced this thing. But I thought it was a bit amateurish in some ways, the interview. To come dressed in that way, I'm not going to be, I can't be that unobservant that I wouldn't notice that he was an officer. But it went quite well. He was, again, a chap without, in my view, sort of any particular war experience behind him. A very nicely spoken chap. So I duly got orders to go to this particular place, where there were probably about 20 other officers at this particular camp, and about probably 20 other ranks, no, about 15 other ranks. And we did a series of assault courses. One particular one I remember is that it was stressed, the timing of it was of some importance. By then I was becoming quite fit again. My feet were very much better.
You said,
and I had been quite good at these sort of things anyway. At Sandhurst I'd done a lot of this. But during the, you had to swing over pits and with water in it and climb along ropes and everything. And I came round on the run to a huge wall made of logs. I took one look at it and realized there's no way I was going to get over it. So I ran round it. I thought, well, maybe this is not the right thing to do, but since time is the essence. So I went round it and completed the course. And completed it, of course, almost better than, because almost everybody tried to get over this thing and couldn't. So after it was over, they said, you've got extra putty points for not hesitating and not attempting to avoid it. He said, we thought that was very good, so I was rather pleased about that. We did a lot of other things. We had sort of approaches to, tactics of moving behind the lines again, because I've done the patrol groups, I found this. But one of the interesting things is I saw a psychiatrist who, as soon as I saw him, he looked a rather peculiar fellow as far as I can, sitting behind a desk. And he kept, they flashed on a little screen things like Bennett. So I said, ouch. German, run, and so I was trying to give all the wrong answers to what he was expecting, you see. And he was getting quite cross with us, you see. And in the end, we ended up shouting at each other. I said, you're a bloody idiot. I said, you need a psychiatrist, not me. Well, I mean, do you think I answer these, just because they're I've used it to sort of, show you that my brain is not absolutely addled, you see. Anyway, he dismissed me very hurriedly. He was a major and he was entitled to do. And the CEO, I think it's Colonel Hilliard, I think it was, called me in. He had got quite a broad grin on his face. And he said, you realize you've had a terrible report from the psychiatrist? So I said, yes, I think I probably did. And I said, but I think he's the fellow that needs a psychiatrist. He said, I'm inclined to agree with you. He is a funny fellow, isn't he? He said. So that obviously went quite well. And I can't remember how, but I got another communication when I was at home that I was going to go to drop into Malaya.
Was this after the course at Brecon?